Thank you very much. Honorable members, allow me to welcome you to this meeting and to thank you for always prioritizing this meeting. Today, we convened this meeting to consider the revised report on public participation and to hear presentations on the report by the Parliamentary Services. But before we go to the business of the day, allow me to address allegations made by the DA against the chairperson of this committee and the committee itself, which may delegitimize this process and bring some members of this committee and parliament into disrepute. The South African Constitution makes provision for multi-party democracy and multi-party portfolio committees. These are mechanisms through which diverse political parties and or members can and should persuade one another in pursuit of the national interest. No individual or political party, however big or small, should put their interest above the national interest. The land question is a matter. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hello. Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Okay. The land question is a matter of national interest, which should be resolved by all, regardless of their party political interests. We should use this ad hoc committee to persuade one another in pursuit of consensus or sufficient consensus. In my humble view, it is contrary to the spirit of consensual politics for a political party to leave a democratic forum and mobilize public opinion against parliamentary processes which they have the full right to participate in and persuade fellow MPs and political parties to accept their standpoint. In my humble view, the DA objection to the ruling of the chair is misplaced because the chair makes rulings based on consensus or sufficient consensus in the committee. This, therefore, rules out unilateral or arbitrary decisions on the part of the chairperson of this committee. I received a letter from Honorable Dr. Anneli Lotrich, MP, on behalf of the DA. The DA issued a joint statement on objection by the DA members to the exclusion of oral submissions on the 18th Constitutional Amendment Bill. The joint statement objects to the alleged decision taken by the chairperson of the committee, Dr. Mathole Motsekga, to reject a legitimate request by external organizations to make oral submissions on the bill. Firstly, there was no such a unilateral or arbitrary decision by Honorable Dr. Mathole Motsekga, chairperson of this committee. We cannot read this statement before the session of this committee as the DA demands and file it as part of this record of proceedings. The DA is free to make its allegations for consideration by this committee. The discussion of these allegations and outcome thereof will be recorded, not the statement itself. It is a fundamentally flawed view that this committee made a unilateral decision to exclude the voices of South Africans in violation of its constitutional obligations, undermining the legitimacy of this process. It is fundamentally wrong to suggest that the chairperson erred in using procedure as an excuse to override the Constitution. Section 56 of the Constitution enjoins the National Assembly to, I quote, to receive representations or submissions from any interested persons or institutions. Furthermore, Section 59 requires, I quote, the National Assembly to facilitate public involvement in the legislative and other processes of the Assembly and its committees, I close the quote. The joint statement of the DA goes on to say that, I quote, by denying interested organizations from making oral submissions, this ad hoc committee may have willfully violated the Constitution and potentially placed the public participation process at risk of of contamination. The ad hoc committee members who agreed with the decision taken to block oral submissions should take responsibility of this constitutional breach. Lastly, honorable members, the DA says that this ad hoc committee should not be used as a rubber stamping exercise, that we all have an obligation to exercise our responsibilities within the confines of this institution, and millions of South Africans who elected us to represent them in the institution. That the DA conveniently chose to forget that Parliament established this ad hoc committee as a mechanism through which South Africans can make proposals for the resolutions of the land question. This ad hoc committee is a multi-party mechanism in which members of the political parties or political parties themselves should seek to persuade one another in pursuit of consensus or sufficient consensus. It is proper and procedurally correct that individual members of the committee and of political parties represented in this committee should raise their concerns to allow constructive engagement by other political parties rather than make untested allegations which bring other parties and their leaders, including Parliament, into disrepute. I do not want to repeat the process because it is a matter of record. I trust that during the engagement with the DA letter, members will reinstate the process to show that no body or no oral submission was excluded. Before we go to the business of the day, I shall allow, with your permission, engagement on the DA allegations. I thank you, and I make this deviation from the program subject to your approval, because these allegations may impact on the discussion relating to the revised report. I thank you, honorable members, but I am not the committee. As I always say, I am just a chairperson of this committee. So I stand to be guided by yourselves on the matters raised by the DA and my response to their allegations. I thank you. Yes. I see the hand of
From Prof. Lotrit and Honorable Gumede.
Honorable Gumede, and who else? Honorable Gumede, can you proceed?
Chair. Sorry, Chair, my hand was up first.
No. I think that's what I wanted to comment on.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Chairperson, my hand was up first, and the order is hands first.
Chair.
Honorable Dr. Trolley, can we hear the what Honorable Gouverneur says? Maybe it has a bearing on your hand.
Yes.
Honorable Gumede, proceed.
Chair, I wanted to suggest and especially recommend that since Honorable Rodrigue was not present on the day, it will be better that she first listens to our contribution can then respond after having heard or wants to summarize what other members would have contributed. If you were absent and having been apologized for, you can then be the first speaker, not unless she says you have misrepresented her on the argument that they were excluded. However, Chair, I wish to support the view that says the work of the chairperson is to summarize the contributions of the members. You come up with a summary when all members would have contributed. I remember I contributed on that day because it was quite clear that in fact there is even an allegation that the member that raised the matter wanted to hear the recordings, because there was a view as well, if I want to, because there are two matters. There is the first one where a certain group wanted to come and do the oral representation. And the second one is the one which the DA wanted to go and interfere, or rather interact with the officials. These two are more or less the same. But you'll understand, Chair, that the other members, they just want to make this process to be interpreted as flawed. We discussed this, the first one, and we came to a conclusion that those members, that grouping, was given an opportunity out of the choices that they had. They opted to have a written submission. If now you give them the oral presentation, they would have been given two options, which in fact would have come after the cutoff date. That was not accepted. We all discussed it and we felt that no, it was going to be unfair. If you are to do that, all other, as the estimate was 200,000 people, all other 200,000 members that contributed to the bill will have to come and have the queue wanting to do the second presentation in whatever sense. And we all concluded it was going to be a very cumbersome kind of a process. As a result, that cannot be accepted. Even the last one, Chair, where they wanted to interact with the officials, it was quite clear because the resolution said any person that wants to say anything to the officials, let them have a written submission and be given to the officials. It's not your fault, Chair. If ever it's your fault, it means then it's the committee member's fault, because you were summarizing what we were saying. I'm the first one, I'm the person that contributed, and if that's the case, your summary accommodated my views as well as the views of many. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Dr. Lott,
thank you very much. Yes.
Rules. Let me speak first. Unwritten rules of engagement say that those who have made allegations in writing, as the DA correctly did, must listen to the people against whom the allegations are made. And that here the allegations are made against the chairperson who has spoken and against other members of the committee. So you can have the first right to respond because you have put your position in writing and it is well known. Can we agree that allow other members to speak and I'll give you adequate opportunity to respond? And I also...
I'm sorry, Chair, I do not agree. I do not agree. I have the first right of reply. This is not a court of law. I have a first right of reply in this matter. You have not put the essence of the
term
to
the committee.
No, with respect.
You have informed the committee. You cannot disallow me and allow the ANC to first speak on this matter.
With respect, Dr. Lotus, I'm not disallowing you. I'm saying you made allegations. Allow those against whom the allegations are made to respond, and then you will come in and clarify and put your case. That's all. It's a procedural matter.
It is. The allegations are against the chairperson of this committee.
No, not only against the chairperson. It's also against members of the committee. For instance, you say those members who supported the exclusion of external organizations, those members, you don't say only the chairperson, there are other members. So allow those members to speak for themselves. I don't want to speak for them. Can we take the next hand? If there's no other hand, I will allow you to speak. Proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Firstly, I want to start by saying that I take serious umbrage at the fact that you started your reply or your comments on the letter that I and my colleagues have written to you. It was not only me, in that you say that we cannot put party interests above the matter. That is in no case what has happened. We do not put party interest above the matter. We put the interest of the citizens of South Africa above the issue at hand. So that, Chairperson, is incorrect, and I think it is an aspersion on the members of this committee. Secondly, Chairperson, the process that we have followed up to now has been flawed in the sense in terms of public participation and written submissions. Our case last week, and I have to say to Honourable Kumede that he should please refer me to the specific rule where I may not comment on what has happened in a meeting of which I am a member because I was not present. There are a number of members who were present at that particular meeting. The problem is, Chairperson, our request was not that all of a sudden everyone can make oral submissions to Parliament. But if you will recall, in the beginning of last year, before COVID, there was a list of institutions and organizations who would have made presentations to this committee. That did not happen because of COVID. And I want to inquire whether those particular organizations and institutions, because I do not note their names in the report, the updated report that we have received, I do not note their submissions, and they made compelling arguments, whether they were informed that they will no longer, on the basis of I don't know whose decision, it was not a committee decision, that there will be no public participation in terms of oral representations by institutions, whether they were informed that they now have to submit written submissions. And I can refer you to a very specific institution, the Banking Association of South Africa, who would have appeared before the committee in Parliament. But I do not see any reference to their very extensive, comprehensive, compelling submission in the draft report. And as a committee, it is our constitutional duty to exhaust all possible comments of relevance to this committee and this bill. This is a constitutional amendment. It is not just a piece of legislation. The effects of this will be far-reaching. And further to that, Chairperson, again, I want to reiterate, we are rushing this process for some arbitrary date that has been set in a Chief Whip forum, not by this committee that I can recall. What is the rush, Dr. Moshege? Why do we have to rush this? This is a constitutional amendment. We can take as long as is necessary. And therefore, I stand by the letter that we have sent you. And as in closing, I want to say, Chairperson, that thank you for actually giving us the gist of our letter, because it is now recorded and has to be part of the minutes. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't want dialogue. I see Honorable Mahlatsi. You can address us.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good evening, Honorable Members. Chair, I would, for purposes of progress for this particular meeting, because unfortunately this matter was not on the agenda for us to peruse, and we were actually not prepared to come and discuss this issue, I will therefore request that the meeting defer this matter to the next meeting, and then we progress with the business of the day. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mahlatsi. Any other contribution? Dr. Melder?
And that is also my name, Prof.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good evening to everybody. Chairperson, I'm not sure if I'm wrong, but I haven't seen the minutes of our previous meeting. I don't know if that's been circulated yet, because the minutes will also give us some indication in terms of what actually happened or did not happen. That's the first point. The second one, Chairperson, is you referred in your summary right in the beginning to the term sufficient consensus. And I would like to ask if you can assist, please, what the definition would be in a committee like ours of sufficient consensus. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Honorable Murasa, sir. Honorable Rosetta, and then will be followed by Honorable Shibambu.
Chairperson, I was saying thank you for this opportunity and good evening to everyone on the platform. My chair, number one, let's agree that the current debate comes as a result of the letter that you got from the DA. It is good. It is the democratic right of everyone to register his or her concern if not satisfied with something. But the letter, you received it not in your personal capacity as a doctor or professor Mutia. Is the letter which should find way in the portfolio committee, so that the portfolio committee must pronounce itself on that very same letter. And we have not seen the letter, Prof, as we speak now, Chairperson. Can we request administration to circulate the letter? I'm saying this by way of seconding and supporting what Honorable Dibulelo as proposed, so that immediately after we shall have seen the letter, in our next meeting, we can itemize it and now debate about the letter, which we would be knowing the contents thereof. You see, now we have just heard you speak about the letter. The contents are known by DA. Majority of people on this platform, we don't know what is it that is said. The substantial contestation here. Can we therefore, as a blip, defer this matter? We will itemize it and talk about it, and as a portfolio committee, take a decision. If it means we must vote whether
there is a content in what they are saying, so be it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Russell. Honorable Chibambo.
Thank you very much. I think that we should observe that as part of this process, there is an attempt to delegitimize or delegitimate the entire process, because the DA and those who are submitting all these different proposals are building a case which they will later on challenge the constitutionality of this process. I think we know, all of us, where we stand in terms of what will be the ultimate the papers in terms of the amendment of the Constitution. Majority of us agree that we should amend the Constitution. But perhaps, hey, you must give thought to this proposal that Let that be oral submissions. Let's listen to them. You know where we stand. Let's listen to whoever wants to come and everything else. They have read what they submitted through the written submission. But I think we should listen to them and then we interact with that particular person so that we're not found at fault if a review application is made in terms of a process. Let us not fall into the hands of right-wing forces by making what could be procedural mistakes. Because perhaps, although we've dealt with this before in the constitutional review committee and everything else, let's look into precedent in terms of what have we done before in terms of legislation and the constitutional amendment process. Because you know how the courts are biased in terms of some of the issues, not all the time. But let's listen to them. And then we'll then take it from there. I don't think that it will be a train smash, because ultimately we will amend Section 25 of the Constitution to permit for expropriation without compensation. That is the principle that we're moving from. So if people want to speak further, but let's just make it point that it is not prolonged for a very long time, because this is a long overdue process in terms of what happens. So to avoid prolonging the process through a constitutional review, let's listen to them, Chair. I'm pleading with you that you can take that particular process in that particular form. Thank you.
Before I make a ruling, can we hear Honorable Masatsu? Honorable Masatsu?
Oh, Chair, no, I did not lower my hand. I had already made my contribution.
Yeah. Let me say that I'm persuaded by Honorable Mathati, who said, let's defer the matter. And he was supported by Honorable Murosetla, because I operated under the assumption that this letter was distributed to the members, and therefore you are aware of it. And therefore, it would be unfair to the members to entertain a letter which only came to the attention of the chair, but it was meant for the members of the committee. So I'm persuaded that we should defer the matter. Similarly, I'm persuaded by Honorable Chibambo that let's listen to these people. But that decision must emanate from the discussion of the letter at the next meeting, when all members are on the same page. Because when we consider the reasonable and accommodating proposal by Honorable Chibambo, we also need to take into account how many are these groups that want to address us. And how much time do we have for that? Is it something that is meant to derail or delegitimize the process? But I can't express an opinion on that. All I can say, with your permission, is that the matter we are dealing with is not on the agenda, and you have not had cite to the letter, and therefore you cannot discuss it meaningfully. And the proposal by Honorable Chibambo
can also fit in when we discuss the letter, which raises the need for oral submissions. So can we defer this matter to the next meeting and go back to the business of the day?
Supported.
Any seconder?
Agreed, Chair.
Thank you. Any opposition?
Chairperson.
Any opposition to the... Oh, yes. I didn't answer you, Dr. Moore.
No.
I didn't answer you. I think during the constitution-making process of which you were part, the concept of consensus and sufficient consensus was raised. But because for the purpose of this meeting, we don't want to enter into an academic debate. When we come back to discuss this matter in the context of which I raised that question, we will respond to your question, but not today. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I raised my hand and with respect to a different issue, if you will allow me to address you, please.
No, certainly.
Thank you, sir. I just want to ask, as you correctly point out, that the issue that we've dealt with until now was not on the agenda. And on the agenda technically is the report that deals with public participation. I don't have a problem for us to deal with that, obviously. But if we are going to allow oral evidence, obviously it will also have to be included in the report that deals with public participation. That does not mean that we cannot continue to discuss the report, but it will mean that we cannot finalize the report tonight if that's going to happen. That's all the point that I would like to make. Thank you, sir.
The chair went for caucus now. Where is he?
No, I think the administration is calling him. He muted himself.
Is that a caucus with Dr. Mulder?
I suspect so, but he muted himself.
Caucus with...
Let them deal with that and on the side, and then come back so we can continue with this meeting.
Colleagues, I'm not part of the caucus at the moment. I think the Honourable Chairperson fell off.
Dr. Annelie Littritt, you can take over. The chair is out, and I think we can proceed with the meeting.
Who's going to chair this meeting?
No, can we ask the two advocates to just to check the chair how far he is in terms of connecting again of reconnecting?
I'm connected.
Thank you, Chair.
I'm connected. I lost Dr. Mulder because of internet. Can we hear him again?
Sorry, Chairperson. The point I was just making was that we've just now said that the matter that we've just discussed will be postponed until probably the next meeting. But also the issue was mentioned of allowing oral evidence for certain entities, and we need to discuss that. The point I'm making is that on the agenda for tonight is the discussion of the report dealing with public participation. I'm saying that if we allow oral evidence, that obviously will also have to be part of public participation, which means although we can discuss the report tonight, we can't finalize the report if we're going to have also that submissions made in terms of an agreement that we've reached. That's a...
Dr. Mulder? Dr. Mulder? Dr. Mulder?
Yes, sir.
You are correct. We have accepted the report as a living resource document. which means it doesn't stop us from going ahead with our work. But you are right to say that if we are going to consider receiving oral evidences, that will have an impact on the finalization of the report. So we are not obliged to finalize the report today, but at the same time, we are not obliged to halt the processes because this is a living resource document. So with that understanding, let us move to the consideration of the report with the understanding that this committee decided that only submissions on matters which were raised in the meetings will be entertained. No other information from elsewhere, but only those things which were raised in the meetings will be entertained in this meeting. So can I then, with that understanding, ask Dr. Thuli to present not the whole report. And I think what we expect is that the administration should be have highlighted the areas which needed correction and elaboration. So I hope that the administration have done that, and they will confine themselves to that and not other issues that were raised, not raised in the meeting. Dr. Thuli?
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity. Chairperson, as requested by members from the last meeting, members had to submit to us what they would like to see amended in the report. And Chairperson, I'm going to focus on the inputs that we received with regards to that. Chairperson, we sent the report as amended to members on Tuesday, and we sent another report today just with the highlights of what actually was amended in the report. And the first one, Chairperson, is on page 5 of the report. If you can go there, Bonani, page 5. Yes. On page 5, Chairperson, if you still remember, members wanted the exact number of submissions that were received from members of the public. And on top there, we have actually indicated the exact number of the submissions that we have received, which is 204,334. And the second point that was made, Chairperson, with the last report, we didn't actually insert the number of areas that the committee visited. So we just indicated there that there were 33 areas or towns that were actually visited by the committee during this time. And that also is on page 8 as well, I think, in the report itself. Page 5 still, there was a comment that we have stated everything that we have done before the public hearings, but we omitted to state the role of the language services during public hearings. So what we have done was just to include there a sentence that states that the interpreting services were provided in all public hearings in accordance with the languages mainly spoken in the localities. That is the statement that we actually included. And then we go to page 37. The third bullet on page 37, Chairperson. Mm-hmm. 37, Bonani. But that point, Chair and members, relates to people working the land. It's the third point, Bonani. There we go. I think so. Yeah. Yes. What was included there is just a sentence that notes that others, meaning that people during the public hearings, highlighted the importance of working the land redistributed to them. So it's like mainly the agricultural land, that once they get the land, and then it needs to be worked by those who actually receive the land.
Is it redistributed or restituted?
The comment was around redistributed land, that okay. People must actually work for that land.
Okay,
yeah, and then on page 57, Bonani. The first bullet there, it relates to the matter of the use of land by farmers as collateral. Page 57, Bonani. Yeah. Yes, that is the, yes. So basically, that is the inclusion, so that the feeling was that issue of using land as collateral by farmers was not sufficiently stated, and needed to actually state that sentence that farmers use land as collateral as well. And we go to page 61, Bonani. On page 61, it's a point about the state having to redistribute state-owned land first. And that point was actually included there, that the redistribution of land should therefore begin with state-owned land. My feeling was that the point was not sufficiently emphasized in the report. And then the...
Chairperson?
Yes.
Sorry, Chip. May I just react to one thing in that sentence?
Mm.
The beginning of that sentence should be a capital T, the word the.
Yeah.
Okay, but also if people say redistribute state land first, are we not entitled to know how much that land is? The extent of that land? Doctor?
Chairperson?
Are we not entitled to know how much state land are we talking about? What is the extent of that state land?
Chairperson, that was not dealt with regards to the submission on that issue. Maybe okay. That is something that the committee can look at maybe after this okay. Process.
Okay.
And then
not just the committee, but the administration should find out from the submitters. Yeah. Okay, proceed.
Yes. Page 77, Bonani. Page 77. I think it's the first bullet on page 77. The issue there, Chairperson and members, was around land that is claimed. It's basically that land that was claimed more was urban land, not rural land in most cases. So the inclusion of that sentence, furthermore, the claims were in respect of urban as opposed to rural land. That matter was emphasized. Chairperson, the second last point is just a general comment that members wanted reference to political parties to actually be removed in the report, and that process was actually done. There is only one comment, Chair, that we could not accommodate in this report, and that comment related to the comments made by the former MP, Ms. Carter, objecting to the committee holding public hearings in Tomo, Mubane. That comment could not be actually accommodated in this report. And the member is aware about that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable members, I want to open the floor for your comment, but just to place on record that each time that this committee gives instructions to the administration, they deliver on time. And that is commendable. They are responsive. So let's engage with what they have presented, and bearing in mind that they are chasing deadlines and they never let us down from one meeting to another. Thank you very much. Honorable Kawa and Honorable Dr. Lotus.
Good afternoon, good evening, Chair and colleagues. I have two questions directed to the administration, Chair, if you may allow it. One relates to submissions that came after the date. How they treated those submissions, because I saw a number of such submissions that came way after the deadline. So my problem, I understand in other situations that I've been involved in, is that when a submission came after the deadline, it's never considered because it's unfair to those who complied with the deadline. And if the deadline is set and you file your thing after deadline, it's usually set aside. And but I think just want to know how was that treated. Number two, and I've also looked at submissions, Chair. For example, the AfriFlora Forum submissions, they number 5,700 plus, but essentially there's only one submission. The rest, I've looked at all of them, Chair. There's only one. I'm talking about what is recorded as 5,700 submissions. I'm trying to look at that now. I don't see it. Where is it? Yes. The AFI Forum is said to have submitted 5,387. It may not necessarily be AFI Forum per se as an organization, but that may include people who are in support of the AFI Forum submission. But the point I'm making, Chair, is that there is essentially one submission, very substantive, it's very long, detailed. I went through it from the first page to the last page. But the rest, that is 5,386, are mainly resubmitting the submission. So that's one. And I also went to look at the IRR as well. IRR is said to have made 131,571 submissions, but essentially there's one submission. I've gone through it in the same way I did with the AfriForum, but the 131,570 are merely resubmitting the submission. All right. So, and then you get two no's. The no's are 14,448. The no's, well, you see, I have no problem with the no's because I essentially saying I object. I do not support. I do not support. Some with some a paragraph or two in the backing up why they are not supporting the Constitution 18th Amendment Act, but the majority are saying I don't support. I have no problem with that. But I want to know how the team treated the IR in the main and the AFI Forum submissions, because all of these taken together, they take us to the number that the team is talking about, 204,000 submissions. when in actual fact, it's not as big as that if you consider that the rest are just a resubmission. And how has that been treated? So I'm asking the resubmission. I'm also asking those that came after the date. Thank you so much, Chair.
Honorable Tava, I think you have adequately and eloquently raised the issues. And then I see the hand of Honorable Mbabama. I'll take that before I allow the administration to address us.
Sorry, Chair, my hand is also up.
Okay, can we take your colleague and then and come back to you? Honorable Mbabama.
Thank you, Chair, and good evening to the honorable members. I want to agree with the question from Honorable Gaba. I would also like to know how did they take the submissions where everything was exactly the same. It was exactly the same submission from different people. And in saying this, I'd like to refer to the oral ones as well, because the EFF had the same verbatim letter for everybody. And the people who spoke in the public hearings said exactly the same thing from the EFF. So I would just like to know how we handle that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Lucas.
Thank you, Chair. I want to also just thank Dr. Tuli and her team for the excellent work they do. And I want to reiterate that they're working at a timeline that is arbitrary. We can still change it. But furthermore, I want to focus on the substantive submissions, Chair. And my first question earlier was that were the people who were supposed to come and present oral representations to Parliament informed that they now have to give written submissions, because they are very substantive, very compelling arguments? And I can give you another example. I do not see this in the report. The whole issue in terms of the impact on the financial sector, the banking sector, mortgages, etc. So that to me at this point is a problem, and I am concerned that we are discussing this report without those submissions, those presentations being incorporated.
Are you done? Are you done?
Yes, Chair. Those are my points.
Honorable members, I think that Honorable Kava and Honorable Mbabama agree in seeking these answers. But I need to be guided by yourselves. If people make submissions which are substantially the same, is it the duty of the administration to make a determination as to which ones must be thrown out, which ones must be accepted? Isn't that the duty of us as the committee? I have no answer, but I think members should entertain that, because if the administration had said these submissions are substantially the same and eliminated some, somebody could have come back and say the administration has actually suppressed some voices. But I'll leave that question open. Maybe before we ask the administration to comment, can I just hear members what their views are on this submissions that are substantially the same? Should they be treated as one submission or as many submissions, or do you want the administration to say how do they deal with them? I'm in your hands. Honorable Murasetla.
Chairperson, I thank you very much for this opportunity. Let me come straight to the point raised by the DA, which you are corroborating, you expect us to corroborate on. You see, Chairperson, if there is what we call a correct answer, you have got a class of 50 learners. And then in their response to the question that you pose, especially when they are writing down or they are speaking on an individual basis, nobody is whispering in another one's ears. There is no way in which we can come in this portfolio committee and say it's a single submission. We will be very much unfair. And in a way, we would be saying the speakers, as they ascended the podium, were actually copying from each other. And that was not the purpose and that the thing. But the reality is each and every one, when ascending the podium, whether they read or whether they spoke, but we take it they were representing their individual within a public hearing platform. So it's, whether they quoted their own political party, it is neither here nor there at this level where we are discussing at the level of the portfolio committee. Thank you very much.
I recognize Honorable Melda, Mahlatsi, and Ndlozi. Next, Honorable Melda.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I would agree with the previous speaker. My view is that the only submissions that we can exclude, be that either oral or in written submissions, would be if there's a submission from the same person more than once. But we must understand, as far as I'm concerned, what is the purpose of public participation? To give the public the opportunity to express themselves. And each and every individual that expressed him or herself should be allowed, and that should be taken up in the report. It won't change anything in that sense. And you cannot now decide, I'm going to take this, not accept this one, I'm going to accept that one. I think we should accept all the representations. The only ones that we can exclude is if there are doubles by the same person. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Mahlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join colleagues in the inputs that they've made. Maybe what we ought to do, Chair, is just to quantify in terms of numbers how the submissions were received. For instance, yes, indeed, we had 200,000 submissions, which we should accept as that particular number. But just to quantify in terms of a table form to indicate out of 200,000 submissions, 100,000 were in this particular format and in this, the inputs were in this particular format, but they should be accepted as such. But that process of quantifying will assist us in ensuring that in essence, how many inputs in terms of submissions were received. But in terms of us rejecting and so on, I do not agree. Let's just quantify in terms of numbers and the actual substance of the submissions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I see Honorable Ndlozi and Honorable Kawa again. Can we take Honorable Ndlozi?
No, Chairperson, I don't want to be redundant. I think I'm covered. We must, all of us, avoid patronizing our peers. But some way of being junior right constantly trying to insinuate that they are being contemplated in the movies of their own. If that is the point of departure, then the entire exercise of public consultation should go out of the window. But the very presence and the constitution of parliament by the same people, who when we are now supposed to listen to junior right, it is really patronized. I think it is unfortunate that some amongst us hold this view. There's no complication. Parliament has gone through many public consultations before. It could be quite important, I guess.
Are you done? Are you done?
Honorable Ngozi?
Yes, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable Kaba?
Yes. No, thank you very much. I'm happy that the matter has been ventilated on, so that whoever reads the report and how this committee dealt with, so whoever reads the reports of the public participation and how this committee dealt with the individual submissions, and is able to get the full picture. My question was directed to the staff, how this was treated. I'm happy that it has been responded. So it must be minuted for the record that the question was raised and was responded to and was left at that. So that is part of our record that this is how we treated the resubmission. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I'm happy that the administration, without fear or favor, they correctly reflected what they received, and that it was not the duty of the administration to explain this. It's a political matter which has been politically dealt with, and the Honorable Kawa and Honorable Mbabama, who sharply raised the issue, I want to believe that they have been answered. Can we leave it at that? Is there any other thing arising from the report or the revised report, Dr. Melder?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, to a certain extent, it plays into what we've just discussed. I would ask that you remember that last week when we discussed the report, I referred to page 25. Of the report, and page 25 gives an indication of the oral hearings or the public participants when the towns were visited. It gives an exact breakdown, and then it comes to the conclusion: so many people that spoke were in support of the bill, so many people were against the bill, and so many it was difficult, it was not clear. I suggested last week that we do need the final number also of the written submissions. And my request also was then, if we could have an indication with regard to the written submissions, how many were in favor and how many were against, to be in line with the other report on page 25. That has not been included in the draft that we have today. And then on page 8 itself, it deals with this to a certain extent. That paragraph just before paragraph 3 indicates, it says, through the process of advertisement from the Government Gazette process, through to the extended period in February 2020, the committee received 204,343 submissions from the public. And then there's a sentence that it's my view, I don't think we need that sentence. It tries to express now and say some were resubmissions. That is just what we discussed now. And I think it's a subjective thing to put in there, and I would suggest that sentence could be removed. And it continues then just with the following conclusion: these submissions were about whether to amend so and so and so and so. I don't think you've got the report necessarily in front of you at the moment, but so it's page 25, read with page 8, the last paragraph before point 3, Chairperson. Thank you, sir.
Honorable members, are we not in a position to say that all that is required is that certain numbers should be provided? But I don't hear anybody saying that the report does not reflect what has happened. And if that observation by the chair is correct, the question is, are we not in a position to adopt this report? Can I hear you on that question? Who wants to come in on that question?
Chair.
Who is that?
Chair. Sorry, my hand.
Who is that?
Sorry.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes, Chair. No. I think let me remind the meeting what was said at the last meeting. We were left with two options. That is, after we were taken through the report. We left the two options. One, to accept the report subject to the amendments that were raised at the meeting. And then the second one was to accept the report after we have seen the additions incorporated in the report. And today, what the team excellently, ably done, has come back with the report incorporating those amendments. I think now we are at a point where we should then, honor what we said we'll do in the last meeting, that accept the report with because there's no objection to the additions. I thought there would be objections, only that would have delayed us accepting the report. And I move that we accept the report with the amendment as amended. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Kawa. And then Honorable Mashatu.
Thank you, Chair. Much as I want to agree with Honorable Kaba, but I just wanted to remind the meeting about a resolution that we took earlier about the oral submission. Unless we are going to agree in principle that we will deal with the oral, if we agree in the next meeting that we allow for oral submission, that it will be a separate report that will therefore be incorporated into this report. However, if that is not the case, I would want to subject ourselves to us noting the report as a living document, subject to possibility of accepting oral submissions that might be taken if the next meeting agree towards that. So I wanted us to just to be mindful of that particular process in us moving forward, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mbambama and Honorable Ndlozi. Honorable Nelda, have you raised your hand again?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and then Honorable Nelda.
Thank you, Chair. I would just like to say that I disagree with us accepting the report now, because we still have to talk next week on whether we want to allow people to come and make oral submissions or not. If there are people who are going to make oral submissions, then what happens? Then the report is not a true reflection of what the public said. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Ndlozi.
Chairperson, I would propose that we agree on oral submissions. I honestly don't know why we are leaving. Let us agree that we are going to take oral submissions and then take this report at a later stage following those oral submissions, having been inculcated. An entire view of public participation. I really think there's no contradiction in that. My view is that let's agree to take oral submissions. That's what happens in these processes. And we don't want to leave any stone unturned. We don't want anybody to go to any court. Let's exhaust the process and listen to all South Africans, including oral submissions. Thank you very much.
Honorable Melda.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. If I could start with the last argument. I think we earlier tonight agreed that the whole question should be discussed at our next meeting after members have also received the letter by Dr. Lottrit and the Democratic Alliance. I just want to come back. We are using different terms. When you put this item just now to the meeting, you used the word to adopt the report. Then another colleague referred to that we use it, that we take note. The other one said we accept, etc. And I think it's a valid point to say that if we're going to allow further oral submissions, we can't adopt the report now, because those oral submissions will also have then to be included into the report. What we perhaps could do, and we've made progress, is to accept tonight the amendments that were made by the staff as becoming part of the working document that we are busy with. But I don't think we can go further than that at this stage. Thank you, sir.
Honorable members,
In this meeting, with due respect, we cannot agree that we are going to accept oral submissions because we still have to listen to the DA's complaints. And I think Dr. Melger is right that maybe what we can do now is to accept that the administration has correctly factored in the recommendations which were made, but we defer the adoption of the report because in case, in the event we accept oral submissions, that may impact on the content of the report. But for us, what is important is that the report is a living resource document on which we'll continue to work on, so it doesn't affect our way forward, the way forward of the process. Can we deal with that way? I see Dr. Lotris and Honorable Mbabama.
Hey, person, thank you very much. I hear what you say about it being a living document. However, the moment we accept it, it is not. It is more than a living document. It is accepted by this committee, and it will most probably be ADC'd. So I would propose that we at most can note it, because this is not a final document. And I am extremely hesitant in accepting a report in a piecemeal manner. So until we have the final report, we can only take note of this report.
With respect, in the last meeting, it was agreed that this is a living resource document. And today, the additional thing that has happened is that the recommendations which were made to revise it were factored in. And there's no challenge on the content. But we accept that in case we accept the oral submissions, that will have an impact on this living resource document. So I don't think that we are at variance on that matter. Honorable Masasi and Honorable Mbaba.
Chairperson, I think now we're dealing with semantics. However, I agree with your summary. In the previous two meetings, we've been accepting this report as a living document. And I think your summary is it's proper to say we accept the document, and maybe we need to deal with the fears of Dr. Lotret that this document will not be ADC'd for her benefit. Just to say we're going, it will be a, we accept it as a living document. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mbabama. Honorable Mbabama. Honorable Mbabana is nowhere to be found.
I am sorry, Chair. I should have taken down my hand. Apologies.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I think we must be loyal to our decisions. Our decision is that this is a living resource document subject to improvements. And today we have received further improvements. And in the event we accept oral submissions, there will be further improvements. So the document is alive, it is there, but we are not formally adopting it pending our decisions on whether or not we are going to accept written oral submissions. Let's leave the matters there and now move on. We have invited the Parliamentary Legal Services to address us on the document. Are they there?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we are. If I may please request that our presentation be put up. I have asked the administration to assist us with that, and then I will take the committee through.
And who are you?
Oh, I'm sorry, Chair. I haven't seen this committee in such a long time. My name is Charmaine van der Merwe. I'm with Parliamentary Legal Services, and I am part of a team of two people. With me is here is also Mr. Lana Halistaki, and between the two of us, we will be presenting to the committee these legal questions that have been identified, and then we also assisted the committee in developing the actual draft bill that is the subject of all these public submissions.
When did you do your work? Because you seem like somebody who has been in Mauritius and has become younger. And thank you very much.
Chair, you are very, very flattering. Thank you very much. I'm not seeing the presentation being...
Advocate Bonani, Dr. Tuli, can you assist?
If I can maybe ask that we put it in a presentation format, if you don't mind. There we go. Thank you very much. I would like to start on this slide that is there currently. I know it is the cover slide, but I want to make it very clear to members that there were a lot of policy matters raised by the public, and that has been the subject. All of these matters have been the subject of the discussions in the past couple of meetings. I'm not going to repeat those discussions. From a legal point of view, I also have nothing to say on policy. That is for the committee to decide. So you will see from our header there that it is definitely only legal and drafting matters that were raised in submissions and identified by the support team that we are going to discuss. If we can go to the next slide. The next slide deals with consultation processes. And I thought to start here, because this is what we are discussing at the moment. We are looking at a consultation process that was required by Section 74 of the Constitution. What was required is that the committee had to publish particulars of the bill in the Gazette for public comment. This was done. Comments were received and are, in fact, being considered. Something else that had to be done was that particulars of the bill had to be submitted to provincial legislatures for their views. Now, I have not received any documents from this, and the committee support team has also indicated to me that nothing was received from provincial legislatures. That does not mean that the process must stop. It is not required of this committee to cajole and find provincial legislatures and beg them for these submissions. It was simply enough to ask them for submissions. And keep in mind that they will also have an opportunity again in the National Council of Provinces, because this bill is a Section 74(2) bill, and that must be referred to the National Council of Provinces. Lastly, the consultation that was required, not specifically by Section 74, but in terms of the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act, was that the bill had to be referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders. And this was then also duly done. And the reason for that is, of course, that we were of the view that it contains provisions that pertain to customary law of customs of traditional communities. The National House of Traditional Leaders supported the amendment in general, and they provided some inputs, and I will deal with those inputs under the relevant slide rather than separately here as one matter. If we can then go to the next slide. There were some concerns expressed about the facilitation of public involvement, concerns about process itself. And the matters in black ink, that is the comments from the public. The matters in blue ink, that is our response from legal services to the input provided. So One of the comments was that inputs on the linked expropriation bill should have been considered. But we need to keep in mind that these are two separate processes. Each bill will have their own public consultation processes, and nothing would have prevented a person from submitting on the constitutional amendment bill and referring to the expropriation bill and vice versa. But you would only consider submissions on the constitution amendment bill when you are dealing with the constitutional amendment bill. There was also a comment that the public should have been able to comment on the circumstances. Now, these are the circumstances when expropriation can be with no rand compensation. But this is the decision of the committee was to not include that in this bill, in the constitutional amendment bill, but rather that this will be in national legislation. And that is then where the public will have, and I think already has, been having an opportunity to comment on these circumstances. There was also a comment about a short time, but I think that's not really relevant at the moment. That was one of the first submissions made, and there has been a significant extension of the period. The committee went around and invited further oral comments. I think that point it has become moot. Then there was also a concern about insufficient information. For instance, if there's a difference between no compensation and without compensation. And in fact, yes, there is a big difference, but I will speak to this later under the relevant topic. But the aspects did indicate that any queries may be sent to the committee secretary. And as far as I'm aware, no such queries were received outside of those that we will be mentioning in the submissions themselves. If we can then go to the next slide, there was also a concern about the mandate of the committee. And the concerns raised was that the resolution of the House only speaks to no compensation, and that is what the bill should limit itself to. Furthermore, for instance, the including improvements to land would be exceeding the mandate of the committee. Now, we need to keep in mind that legislation has to, in the end, make sense as a whole. And sometimes it is necessary that the instruction that is given results in consequential amendments, in further matters that have to be dealt with. And there's a certain level where the committee can add without asking for the mandate to be extended. And then, of course, if the committee, for instance, some of the policy proposals that were made, if the committee feels one of these would be assisting in the purpose of what the committee is doing, the committee can always approach the House and ask for an extension of its mandate. But it is my view that the committee did in fact not exceed its mandate from the House, and that the bill still falls within that mandate. In respect of improvements to land, I will specifically speak to that in a slide that will come up. If we can then go to the next slide. A number of submissions proposed alternative wording for the clauses in the bill. And we did also circulate a document that specifically deals with the proposed wording. Now, some of these were policy decisions, and as I said at the outset, I'm not dealing with policy decisions. That is covered in the report of the Committee on Public Participation and will be dealt with by the committee as part of that process. Some of the proposals were simply something we're simply proposing a different way of saying things, and they were already provided for in the draft bill. So some were either a reference to another subsection, some were, if you do your simple, straightforward interpretation of law principles, you will come to the same result. We will address those in these slides as well, specifically under the relevant topic. The remainder of these proposals are also set out in the slides, and I will discuss them as we proceed. But members are welcome to look at the document that was provided and to also discuss that document. The next slide simply gives us the preamble. Just so that we familiarize ourselves again, this is what our bill's preamble look like. So if we can go to the next slide, where the discussion would be on the preamble for slide 7. One of the first comments is that the preamble is misleading. No compensation is not necessary. It's not one of the more serious problems that the country faced. Now, this is something that the committee can decide to amend, of course, but just to remind the committee that the preamble was taken from the CRC report, and that is what it was based on. There was also a request to indicate that expropriation without compensation is the only legitimate option. The concern here is that we cannot oust the concept of compensation. It is very closely linked to the concept of expropriation, and this is a globally accepted phenomenon. However, both our constitution and international law principles, and we will speak to these international law principles a bit later in this presentation, recognizes that compensation may be less than market value. And that then could be argued to include a nil compensation where the circumstances are justifiable and equitable to do so. We must also keep in mind that present something to this committee. There's a doctrine called the basic structure doctrine. Now, what this says is that the constitution of a country, it is an international concept. The constitution of a country has a basic structure, and any amendment of that basic structure no longer is an amendment, it is a replacement. And because it is a replacement of the basic structure, it is no longer within the legislature's authority to actually do so. So our courts have mentioned this basic structure doctrine, but they have not expressly followed it or rejected it. And some of the comments, unfortunately, they were mostly Obiter, indicated that they, for instance, it would not be acceptable for Parliament to write itself out of the Constitution. So it seems that this basic structure concept is something that will be followed by our courts. And why I'm mentioning it here is because the concept of compensation is so closely linked to the concept of expropriation, we would caution that we might fall foul of this doctrine if we remove the concept of compensation fully. And providing for no compensation achieves the exact same outcome as the wording without compensation, but in a way that does not fall foul of this basic structure doctrine. And that is why we would say that we cannot oust compensation, but we can say that in practice, the outcome will be that no money exchanges hands for the land that is expropriated. Then there were also a comment about historic wrongs, to be referring to colonial and apartheid wrongs. Our comment was, again, you know, this is taken from the CRC report, and historic wrongs, in our view, would include both colonial and apartheid wrongs. But, of course, this is for the committee to add if the committee feels that would make the bill a better product. And then Africans must be empowered to own all categories of land, and the comment was that we should explain what land includes. But that is not really necessary, because the concept of land includes all categories of land. And if we start highlighting certain categories, we actually run the risk of leaving something out, and then there might be some interpretation concerns in future. Whereas just using the word land is an accepted concept. Everyone knows that land includes all categories of land. If we can then go to the next slide. So we are now going to deal with comments on Clause 1A, and this is Clause 1A. So I'm just giving it there for purposes of familiarizing ourselves. If we can go to the next slide, where the first concern in respect of Clause 1A is in fact mentioned. The first concern in this regard indicated that there should be a clear indication of the circumstances when no compensation is payable. And the provisions in Section 25.2 must be made subject to the factors in subsection 3. There was also a concern that the bill is bypassing the circumstances that are currently determining compensation. This is subsection 3, and replaces it with the circumstances determined by national legislation. But this is not correct. The proposed amendment clearly linked subsection 2, paragraph B, the new set, subsection 3, capital A, and subsection 3. And that means that subsection 3 applies to nil compensation as well as the national legislation envisaged. So all of these matters must be read together. There was also a proposal that instead of a court being given a discretion to determine nil compensation, it should always be must. But as we've indicated before, compensation is very much linked to expropriation, and there should be a discretion because there are factors and no two cases will be the same. And that is why discretion is very, very important. If I may now speak to the issue of improvements on land. Improvements on land, I've confirmed with the support staff of the Constitutional Review Committee, improvements on land was not something that was specifically mentioned in the Constitutional Review Committee's report on this matter. However, the committee held a workshop, and in that workshop, it was indicated that there is a need to make it very clear that land includes the any improvements to land, and that is why this features in the bill. Now, if the committee is of the view that this is perhaps not where we want to go at this point in time, it is broader than the Constitutional Review Committee's report, then this can be removed from the bill. And we are asking for instructions in that regard. And when we summarize our conclusions at the end of this presentation, that is then one of the matters on which we are asking for instructions. If we can go to the next slide. There was a proposal that there should be a definition for land reform. It seems that there's a bit of a concern that land reform might have different meanings to different people. Some submitters were indicating that land reform is restricted to reform that addresses the consequences of past racial discrimination, and a court may attach a wider meaning to land reform than what is intended with this. What we would suggest here, and this is another aspect where we are asking for instructions from the committee, is either that the committee provide us for a definition to explain this, if the committee agrees that there should be a definition for this, or, and this would be our recommendation, that the word or the phrase land reform be linked to section 21(8). And we will propose some wording in this regard, and then here if the committee feels that in fact land reform should be given more flesh, so to speak, and then linked to either section 25(8) or a specific definition to be added. We would not have to advertise this amendment as it results from input and suggestions received, and it does not change the meaning of the specific subsection. Another concern was that because we are singling out land reform over the factors in subsection 3, we do not get an equitable balance. But our view on this is not correct. Subsection 8 already singles out a number of reforms, and land and water or related reform is already envisaged. This is something that is part, very, very entrenched in section 25. But even so, it is not singled out over section 25(3). The conditions of subsection 3 is definitely very much applicable. If we can go to the next slide then. This one is quite an important matter, and it seems that there was a lot of comment on this issue, and that is the role of courts. Now, if we look at the role of courts, there was a concern raised that our courts should determine whether nil compensation should be granted, they should always be approving nil compensation. In other words, they should be the initial decision maker. And if you do not have them as the initial decision maker, a view was expressed that we would then be contravening the rule of law because we would be ousting the jurisdiction of courts. However, there was also a contrary view to this, to say, but this is not what was envisaged in the resolution. The resolution that gives this committee its mandate never envisaged that courts should be the first instance when it comes to nil compensation. And in fact, there were a lot of concerns that to make courts your first port of call when it comes to nil compensation would be unduly cumbersome and time-consuming. The South African research chair in property law made a comment to say that the state as expropriator should have the authority to decide administratively that nil compensation is appropriate in a particular case, and should the expropriatee disagree with this, the dispute may always be taken to the court. So it is something that we will definitely have to pay attention to. And it is very important that we do not oust the role of courts. Section 34 of our Constitution enshrines the right of access to courts. And therefore, including a dispute on expropriation. And it is very important that our courts play a definite role in this process. However, if we take the courts as the body that will adjudicate when parties cannot agree, that is still sufficient recourse to a court. There is no requirement that a court must get involved in the first process. In fact, this is where it will become very cumbersome if the court will have to participate in some manner in the investigation whether a property is appropriate for expropriation, and if so, if it is one of those circumstances where nil compensation is in fact required, it will definitely put a big delay on the actual land reform process, and it will totally clog up our court's time. It is just not something that is advisable. If we can go to the next slide, if we look at the practical situation in court, the current process is that the state is the initial decision maker and the courts act as a safety valve if expropriation then is challenged, or rather if the compensation related to it or the process that is followed is challenged. And this is in line with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. All administrative decisions are subject to judicial oversight and review. And furthermore, the committee's mandate does not, in fact, include this change in the court of roles. And this is reflected in the long title of the bill. So the clause, why do we then have what we have? And the reason for that is simply that the interpretation was given that because we are dealing, if we look at the specific clause that we're dealing with, there's two instances. We're talking firstly about an agreement, and secondly, we are talking about a court that decides where parties can't agree. Now, firstly, when we do an agreement, we can agree on anything. We can agree that I will give you the money. We can agree that I will pay you money to take my land. That will all be legal agreements that are made. So there's never been an impediment on an agreement for nil compensation. The concern arose that a court might feel that it is not able to do so. And that is why the amendment focused on the court. But the problem, however, is that we now have an interpretation that indicates that the way this clause reads, only courts may allow compensation to be nil. And if we look at the practical implications, that is simply not something that is implementable. And it will cause a significant delay in land reform, and it will definitely increase the workload of our court significantly. So there's definitely an amendment required. And if we can go to the next slide, this is what we proposed. And in fact, this was part of the submissions also proposed this. So it is simply remove the words court. In other words, we say provided that in accordance with subsection 3A, where land and any improvements thereon are expropriated for the purposes of land reform, the amount of compensation may be nil. And then we cover both instances. So it would definitely be a recommendation from our side that the committee seriously considers this amendment in order to clarify this incorrect interpretation. However, when we look at this interpretation, and we actually had a lot of discussion about this in our office, and our whole office or the leaders of our office are of the view that this amendment, this specific amendment, the fact that the word court is deleted, will have to be advertised for comment. I see we've lost the presentation, but I'll continue. I'm sure it will come on very, very soon. So we will have to advertise this amendment. And what we considered is the various cases on public participation. If we look at the case of the Doctors for Life specifically, the court indicated that we must look at the nature and importance of the legislation, the intensity of its impact on the public. I am now on slide 13. Thank you. So the importance of the legislation, the intensity of its impact on the public, and what Parliament has considered to be appropriate public involvement on this matter. And because the public incorrectly interpreted the proposed amendment, it is possible that members of the public did not respond. They might have been of the view that it would be correct for a court to be the first instance, and therefore they did not provide submissions. And that is why we would recommend that this specific amendment, in fact, be advertised. Then if I go to slide 14, this is our next subsection. And if we can actually go to 14 and then 15, which discusses the concerns on the subsection. There was a proposal that Clause 1B be deleted because it talks about the amount of compensation being just and equitable, and an equitable balance between the public interest and interest of those affected, and having regard to all of the relevant circumstances. Now, if we can go to slide 15, please. We must remember that this clause is a very important part of the amendment, as it makes it clear that compensation, regardless of the amount, must be just and equitable. We cannot delete this clause. It is absolutely paramount to the whole concept of compensation and expropriation. There's also a concern that the draft amendment retains the fair and equitable requirement, but it does not explain why no compensation would meet that standard. Now, to some extent, this question puts the cart before the horses, because we are not saying that no compensation is something that in itself is something that we can say is or is not fair and equitable. Every circumstance listed in subsection 3 and then in the national legislation will have to be considered. And if those circumstances make it just and equitable for compensation to be nil, then that is what compensation may be. So the argument should come from the other side, and not starting with no compensation. It should start with all the circumstances that indicate no compensation is fair and equitable, and then only will no compensation meet that standard. If we can go to the next clause, clause 1C, the next slide, sorry, is clause 1C. And this clause, this is the one that indicates about national legislation. If we can go to the next slide on this. The concerns raised here were mostly that, well, on the one hand, some of the submitters indicated that we don't need this clause. In any event, you will have national legislation that will do this. On the other hand, some submitters indicated, but we should not allow national legislation to do so. It should be something that is, in fact, in this bill. And whether to do it the one way or the other, we would recommend that there is, in some legislation, some circumstances, simply to provide some clarity and certainty in law. Whether that, however, is in the Constitution through this amendment bill or in the in national legislation, that would be a decision for the committee to take. And the committee can take into account all the various arguments in this regard. A number of these concerns are listed there in the one bullet point with all sub-bullets. Inadequate consultative processes will not constitute reasonable and objective criteria, will fetter judicial discretion, will constitute arbitrary deprivation and change required voting majority. Now, all of these specific reasons listed here, we must keep in mind that subsection 1 indicates that expropriation may never be arbitrary. So deprivation of property may not be arbitrary. So you cannot have circumstances that would be arbitrary because that would be unconstitutional. Inadequate consultative processes, the expropriation bill that currently sets out these circumstances have to comply with the relevant sections 59 and 72 of the Constitution regarding public participation. And there have to be adequate, sufficient consultation processes on those circumstances. So that concern is dealt with in that way. It must constitute reasonable and objective criteria or else it will not comply with Section 36. So all of these concerns are in fact addressed either in the bill itself or by the Constitution itself. And then the only concern there, and this is where the committee can make that decision, is that the voting majority will differ in respect of a constitutional amendment bill. So if the circumstances are included in the constitutional amendment bill, it will be a two-thirds majority, whereas if it's in national legislation, that will be a simple majority. But as I said, that is something for the committee to consider. From a legal point of view, it could be in either this bill or in the expropriation bill. If we can go to the next slide, the short title and commencement. There were no comments received on this specific clause. So if we can go to the next slide regarding the memorandum on objects. There was a concern our memorandum on objects indicates that there's no financial consequences to the state. And there was a concern that how could this be? There should have been a socioeconomic impact assessment that would then indicate what these financial consequences are. Now, first off, a socioeconomic impact assessment is not a requirement for a committee bill. That is something that is a requirement for cabinet legislation. However, it does not stop this committee from requesting that such a say-as must be done. However, we need to keep in mind that this bill does not change the law. It simply makes it clear. So in other words, there is no change in the actual situation on what the Constitution will be saying in practice after this bill is enacted. It will simply be saying it a lot more clearly. Then there was a concern that the memo on objects incorrectly refers in one sentence to without the payment of compensation. And of course, as I've explained before, without the payment of compensation is an incorrect phrasing, and we would recommend that this be corrected so that it reflects correctly that it be with no compensation. If we can then go to the next slide. And then, Chair, with your permission at this stage, I will hand over to Ms. Hanny Starkey, who will be taking the committee through the rest of these slides, as this has been her area of research. Thank you.
Mrs. Hanny.
Good evening, Chair. Good evening, members. I will be taking you through three issues, the first being the constitutionality of nil compensation, and then the expropriation and the rule of law debate, and then I will end off with dealing with the submissions that dealt with in the international law concerns. So the amendment is... So basically, there was a host of submissions that said that the amendment is a limitation of the existing right to receive compensation for land. The Constitution cannot be... Sorry, I just... Sorry, sir.
This is Ali.
Yeah, it seems that you might have some connection problems. If you would allow me, I will continue until she's ready to proceed again.
Please do.
We must transfer all the information. It's going to take time.
So the constitutionality of
compensation.
Sorry, who is the person in the background? Who is the person in the background? Who is that? Who is the person in the background? Please mute yourself and proceed to advocate.
Sorry, Chair. So, first off, constitutionality of the concept of nil compensation. Some of the concerns, and this is what we have on this specific slide, was that the amendment is in fact a limitation of the existing right to receive compensation. The submitters were indicating that compensation must be just and equitable, and if it does not meet this requirement, it will be unfair and inequitable, and it will be against Section 36. Another concern was that expropriation must always be accompanied by compensation. It is a core requirement, and if you don't have this, it is confiscation. And then there were a number of court cases quoted that talk about that you need to have a fair balance. It must not impose a disproportionate burden. But there is also a situation that last bullet there, the land claims court in the Mthabathi matter, indicated that there can be circumstances where the absence of a right to compensation on expropriation is a reasonable and justifiable and in the public interest. So it is clear that there is differing views on this matter. And another view was expressed that the Constitution cannot be used as a barrier. As Subsection 8 expressly says, the provisions of Section 25 cannot impede land, water and related reform. So the targets that were set in the 1990s were premised on Section 25, and it used it as a toolkit to do so. So if we go to the next slide, this is now our response. This whole slide here, slide 20, is what submitters were saying. And our response to this is on slide 21. Now, first off, the bill is drafted on the basis that it's already implicit in the Constitution that there will be circumstances where it will be just and equitable for compensation to be nil. And you will recall when I started this presentation, I spoke about how compensation is a very integral part of expropriation. But it is also acknowledged that there are circumstances where, in fact, it could be just and equitable that the amount of compensation is zero, so that there's no money changing hands. And in the subsections 3 and 3A, in fact, make it very clear that the requirements of the rest of these subsections, specifically 2 and 3 of Section 25, would remain relevant to determine whether compensation may be nil. So what we are dealing with here is not a situation of limitation. We are acknowledging that there is compensation. There's no limitation on your right to compensation whatsoever. But what we are saying is compensation must be determined, taking into account a number of factors. And as was said in the Mthabathi case, there might be circumstances where that would then be zero. So
Specifically, mention was made on international law and how international law relates to this whole question. But that I will leave to Ms. Hallie Starkey, and she has indicated that she has now sorted her connection problems. So she will take over from me from the next slide, speaking about expropriation and the rule of law. Sorry about that, but I think we saved it.
Sorry about that. Hello. Yes, so as I explained earlier, Chairperson, I'll be dealing with the rule of law aspect. And there have been few submissions that argued that the bill affects and is against the rule of law, namely Section 1C of the Constitution, which, as members would know, states that one of the founding values of the Republic of South Africa is that the supremacy of the Constitution and the upholding of the rule of law. The rule of law can be defined as the law must be clear, it must be publicized, it must be stable, it must be just, and applied evenly, protecting fundamental rights, including security of persons and property. The argument by submitters has been that providing for national legislation to set out circumstances for expropriation without compensation would result in uncertainty in law. The circumstances where expropriation of without compensation need to be applied in Section 25 in a closed list. In other words, submitters had argued that only in those circumstances appearing in Section 25 would warrant expropriation with compensation. Our response, which you can see in blue, is the bill upholds the principle of the rule of law, in that it adheres to the three basic principles of the rule of law, the principle of authority, the principle of procedural legality, the principle of substantive legality. And in fact, in terms of the principle of authority, the constitutional amendments are permitted and in line with the Constitution. In terms of the principle of procedural legality, the procedural aspects of law making were followed. As you could see, as was explained earlier, there was extensive public participation process. And in terms of the principle of substantive legality, the bill itself protects and promotes the fundamental rights, promoting the rights of those who experience land dispossession, whilst also balancing the rights of those whose land will be expropriated. The bill also makes explicit which is already implied in the current reading of Section 25. And this can be seen from Section 25(8). The bill also has a rational purpose, and the wording of the bill is linked to that rational purpose. Furthermore, the requirements of Section 25, subsection 1, 2, and 3 must also still apply, in that if you consider Section 25, 1, 2, and 3, no one must be deprived of property arbitrarily, and expropriation is a form of deprivation. So these subsections will still need to apply, and any circumstances contained in national legislation will be subject to that compliance. Also, to comply with Section 36, which is the limitation clause of the Constitution. National legislation will thus be subjected to the Constitution, which is the supreme law of the land, and thus to the rule of law. A second, you need to go back to slide 23, I'm so sorry. Okay, yes. So another argument that submitters had was that property rights are the basic tenet of the rule of law, and the bill must be dealt with in accordance with the procedure described in Section 74(1) of the Constitution. And as members will know, 74(1) deals with Section 1 of the Constitution and any amendments to Section 1, which require a National Assembly vote of 75% of the members. This bill does not seek to amend Section 1 of the Constitution, and therefore it is not a Section 74(1) amendment. And all law in South Africa is subject to the Constitution and the rule of law. That does not mean that the amendment to any act must be treated as a 74(1) amendment. The test is to consider what is being amended in the text of the bill. And this bill, as reiterated, does not intend on amending the founding values of the supremacy of the Constitution or the rule of law. The third argument under the banner of the rule of law is the argument that the jurisdiction of the courts cannot be ousted and that this bill seeks to oust the jurisdiction of the courts. This is incorrect. The court's role is central to the process, and no provision is made to oust the jurisdiction of the court. Can we go to the next slide, please? The international law concerns raised by submitters are broken down into four arguments. So the first argument that I'll deal with is that there were a number of submitters who said that the bill breached a number of international obligations and conflict with treaties such as the listed bullet points over underneath the slide, underneath the point. The second argument was that 2011 of the UN Conference of Trade and Development Series on Issues in International Investment Agreements supports the argument that the bill breaches international obligations. The third argument was then that the bill will expel South Africa from AGOA. And then the fourth was that investments may decrease as the bill will affect Section 10 of the Protection of Investments Act. At this point, before I continue into explaining the various articles and various treaties that submitters have said that this bill breaches, I'd like to point out that to members that this is a very high-level summary of the extensive research that legal services conducted in terms of the international law issue. And should members want a copy of that research, or same can be made available. But this is just a high-level summary of the salient points of that discussion. So as I said, I will individually unpack the various treaties. So Article 17.1 and 17.2 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights says that everyone has the right to own property alone as well as in association with others. No one shall be arbitrarily deprived of property. Section 25 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa does not create a right to own property. I know this sounds a little bit too controversial, but it's not. It's the negative guarantee. It says, i.e., no one may be deprived of property. And our response is that despite Section 25 only providing a negative guarantee, the section implies that in South African property may be owned by a person or persons, and that this right is guaranteed. Article 17.1 is thus applied in South African law. The bill does not amend this principle. Furthermore, Section 25.1 repeats the contents of Article 17.2, which says no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of property. In that Section 25.1 states that no one should be arbitrarily deprived of property. South African case law has set out various requirements that must be adhered to when avoiding arbitrary deprivation of property. And these include a law of general application, that it has to be discernible, there has to be a discernible standard, that it has to be precise, it has to be accessible, it has to be made public. The bill proposes thus to treat people in similar situations the same, i.e. the circumstances where compensation may be null. The standard is clear, the law is precise, therefore the bill does not propose arbitrary deprivation. The second article or treaty is Article 4 of the Resolution on Permanent Sovereignty over the Natural Resources, 1803 of 1962. I'm just going to call it Resolution 1803. And then also Article 2 of the Charter of Economic Rights and Duties of the States, Resolution 3281. And submitters often referred to the Texaco Overseas Petroleum versus Libya case and also the State of Kuwait versus the American Independent Oil case. The wording of these articles are very similar, so I will be dealing with them together jointly. But both resolutions must be read in the context of what the General Assembly was trying to achieve, that the rights to self-determination, international economic relations, and economic rights and the duties of the state. The bill still requires that expropriation must be for public purpose. Public utility is what the Resolution 1803 speaks to, and for appropriate compensation to be paid, in our case, albeit null. Appropriate compensation is, in certain circumstances, can be null, and this can be seen from the Banco Nacional de Cuba versus Chase Manhattan Bank case. Therefore, in our opinion, the bill complies with Resolution 1803 and 3281. And
Delana, you muted yourself.
Sorry about that. I didn't realize I muted myself. Where did members fall off? Okay, I'll just repeat the last point, which is that we are compliant with 1803 and 3281. Furthermore, the resolutions 1803 and 3281 specifically bring to the fore the focus on the General Assembly to respect sovereignty of a nation over its resources by qualifying the phrase appropriate compensation. If you consider resolution 1803, it specifically says in accordance with the rules and force in the state. And secondly, if you consider resolution 3281, it says the relevant laws and regulations of all circumstances that the state considers is pertinent. I'd like to move on to the next slide, please. Article 4C of the Treaty of the South African Development Community, SADC, with reference to the SADC Tribunal case of Mike Campbell versus the Republic of Zimbabwe. This is a very popular case, and a lot of the submitters argued that the SADC Tribunal in Mike Campbell judgment held that the Zimbabwean amendment to the Constitution for expropriation with compensation was subverted the rule of law and breached Article 4.4 of the SADC Treaty. Our argument is that Article 4C obliges all member states of SADC to respect the principle of human rights, democracy, and the rule of law. The amendment in question in Campbell provided that any person having a right or interest to expropriated land would not be permitted to apply to a court or challenge the acquisition of that land. The concern that this is a dangerous precedent of Zimbabwe is thus unfounded, as the bill is not depriving citizens from their rights to access the courts or the right to a fair hearing. Whereas in the Zimbabwean amendment, it did that. In fact, the amendment stated that any law regulating acquisition of land would not apply and that people affected would not be permitted to go to court. Therefore, the bill does not breach 4C of the treaty and does not subvert the rule of law. Article 1 of the Protocol 1 of the European Convention of Human Rights was referenced to the European Court on Human Rights, and the Pinkova judgment was often mentioned by many submitters. Submitters argued that the European Court of Human Rights in Pinkova held that that expropriation without compensation falls foul of human rights standards. Article 1 of Protocol Number 1 of the Human Rights of the European Convention of Human Rights states that every person is entitled to the peaceful enjoyment of their possessions and that no one may be deprived except for the in public interest and subject to the conditions provided by the law. The court in Pinkova stated that any measure which interferes with the right to peaceful enjoyment of possessions must strike a fair balance between the demands of the general interest of the community and the requirements of the protection of the individual fundamental rights. Our argument is that the court further found that the decision to enact law expropriating property will commonly involve the consideration of political, economic, and social issues, which is what this bill does. It must also be noted that the European Convention of Human Rights does not even apply to South Africa. South Africa turns to its own constitution when considering how to strike a balance, which is it is entitled to. Finally, if we can turn to the next slide. Okay. Submitters have also argued that the attempt to constitutionalize the notion of nil compensation is problematic, i.e. to deny for land reform compensation, but to pay compensation for expropriation violates equality. Article 26 of the International Covenant on Civil Political Rights was mentioned by a number of submitters. And Article 26 speaks to the equality before the law. The concern is that the bill would treat people differently and thus would operate unequally. However, the ICCPR also recognizes that persons whose rights were violated should be provided with effective remedy. In pursuing these principles, our own Bill of Rights espouses the same principles that is relied on in Article 26. Our court has in certain instances limited equality. Look at Section 9.2. It recognizes that measures may be taken to address disadvantages created by unfair discrimination. However, it is not the intention of the bill to infringe the right of equality or to discriminate unfairly, but rather differentiate in order to provide for land reform. And those are the international treaties that were raised by a number of submitters. The second argument that I go into is the 2011 UN Conference on Trade and Development series on the issues of international investment agreements, which supports the argument that the bill breaches international obligations. These UNTAG documents emphasize that, I seem to have lost the slide, but it's fine, I'll just continue. The document emphasized that through international investment agreements, IIAs, and bilateral investment treaties, BITs, states have established a guarantee for foreign investments against expropriation of the investments without compensation. It also explains that in the 20th century, the focus in the international community went from full compensation to the 1960s and 70s that acknowledged states' right to economic self-regulation, which included granting appropriate compensation. However, each individual IIA and BIT must be considered on its own merits. Whether IIA or the BIT is affected by the expropriation, its terms will have to be considered individually. Whether IIA or the BIT contains a provision that requires market-related compensation, that will be one of the factors that must be considered when the amount of compensation is calculated in practice. So we're nearing the end, so I will conclude in a few minutes. I just have two more points to factor in. The third argument was the argument that we will be expelled from AGOA, which is the African Growth and Opportunity Act. And I'd like to state at this point that this is incorrect. A country's eligibility is not determined by one factor, but rather follows months of discussion with the U.S. Many factors play the role. In fact, the fact is that AGOA cannot be used as an argument to prevent South Africa from improving its laws or from reviewing and changing its policies. It cannot be said with certainty that the adoption of this bill will terminate South Africans' eligibility from AGOA. Such a statement is more speculation than fact. The bill is further not developing any new law or changing existing laws. As has been repeated in this committee, it is confirming what is already there. And the final argument is that investments may decrease as the bill will affect Section 10 of the Protection of Investments Act 22 of 2015. Section 10 of the Protection of Investments Act states that investors have a right to property in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution. This act thus already applies the implied concept that it may be just and equitable for compensation to be nil in certain circumstances. However, whether the bill will be that much an effect on the foreign direct investment that it should not proceed is a matter of policy for the committee to consider, and it's not a legal question. In conclusion, and considering the various legal submissions made, i.e. the submissions relating to public participation, as explained by Advocate Van der Merwe, the mandate of the committee, the role of the courts, the rule of law, our international obligations, we recommend that the amendments be made to the bill that relate to the following issues. We recommend that a definition for land reform should be made by linking it to subsection 8. We recommend that the role of the courts be re-looked at, and there should be an amendment in our current, and we have actually, Advocate Van der Merwe has suggested wording, and also correcting the memo of objects. Following these conclusions, we need further instruction, and we have two points we would really require further instruction. Should improvements on land be removed from Clause 1A, or should it be retained? And secondly, should the circumstances be spelt out in subsection 3A, that is our new subsection 3A, or conversely, should 3A be just removed, or should it, as it does now, provide for national legislation to stipulate the circumstances. And that concludes our presentation. Thank you for your patience. I know it's quite late.
Are you done?
Yes, Chair, I'm done.
Thank you very much. I'm going to ask for guidance. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, Chair, we can hear you.
I'm going to ask for guidance from the committee. You know, because I don't interfere with the administration, I was not aware how complex and extensive this presentation is going to be. I thought it's something that we could receive today and be able to digest overnight and engage with tomorrow. I think I overestimated things or underestimated things, but I don't want to express myself on the matter. I want to leave it in the hands of the committee to guide us as to how do we handle this. Can I open the floor? How do we deal with these complex matters? I don't see any hand. Honorable Melda and Honorable Lothrich.
Honorable Chairperson, Dr. Lothrich was before me.
Okay, fine. Dr. Lothrich.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I want to thank the presenters. However, I think perhaps it would be premature to discuss anything of essence or substantive in this report or presentation, as I would propose that we first wait for the oral presentations for it to be included in this presentation, and that we then, after the oral presentations, have another presentation, and then we can deal with it.
Are you not presupposing that we are going to have oral presentation? Honorable Nelda and Honorable Masatsu.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. It was a fascinating presentation. Let me stop there. We did not have a copy of this. I would love to have a copy, and I would like to study it. And obviously, the things that are mentioned in this presentation is the kind of thing that people will need some instructions from their party caucus and their party discussions. At this stage, I think we can only have a copy of that and give us some time to go and go through it, and we'll reply in time. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mashatson.
Thank you very much, Chair. And let me also echo the views that this is quite an extensive presentation with quite interesting inputs. However, Chair, my view is that looking at the time, we would not be able to clearly have discussions on the presentation. However, I would propose, Chair, that looking at the fact that indeed we would have different political parties having to consult extensively with our political parties and caucuses on the matter, that we accept the presentation and we continue tomorrow with the meeting as it was scheduled to finalize on the issue of the oral submission, whether we accept them or not. And then by next week, you would have given us ample time to assess and check whether how we deal with that matter. And then by next week, we can therefore come back to discuss.
Thank you, Honorable Masazi. Any other input? I understand that we will not be able to engage on this report. Let me allow Honorable Masipa. Honorable Masipa.
Chair, thank you. Chair, I just want to reiterate what I said previously. It's important we are lawmakers. We are not rubber stampers. That's crucial. And we shouldn't be rushing this process. We should be making sure that when we make this law, we make the correct law. The oral submission is very important, and that's the DA's position, that we need to have the oral submission from this presentations that were made today in order for us really to make a good contribution to this discussion. Thank you very much.
What I understand is that with respect to this presentation that we have just received, parties will need to consult their principals before we can take it better further. But there's a proposal by Honorable Matlati that we convene tomorrow not to deal with this matter, because it would require mandates from parties. But tomorrow we should consider the question of oral submissions. Can I hear other voices on this proposal by Honorable Matlati?
Honorable Chair.
Honorable Kala. Yes, proceed.
Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you so much. I think there's an overwhelming support for the suggestion that we defer the discussion on the matter. I think the legal team did an excellent job. The presentation was extensive, and it really requires us to apply our mind on it, to do justice. In that way, I support those who say let's defer the discussion on the matter. There's a proposal that is on the table. That instead of discussing the matter as per the schedule was saying tomorrow we convene at 9 to discuss the matter. Now we are deferring it. Let's continue with the meeting instead, and then discuss, reflect on the proposal, a proposition that there is a proposition on the oral submission, so that we put that behind us and then move forward, because the end product and will be determined finally by whether we will be determined finally once after we have made a decision on the issue. If the decision is to take oral presentations, and the oral presentation will finally impact on the report. If we don't take oral presentation, of course, then this report will then be final insofar as it is based on the public hearings and the written submissions. So I'm therefore suggesting that we conclude the matter first, and then decide on the way forward. Thank you so much. The matter of the oral submissions, and then we decide on the matter on the way forward. Let's discuss that tomorrow at 9:00.
Honorable members, I think we should not belabor the matter. Let's agree that we defer discussion on the input by Parliamentary Legal Services, because that requires mandate from the principals. But let's convene tomorrow to discuss the question of oral submissions, and that would mean that we should require the secretariat, the administration, to distribute DA's letter. It's just a one pager, so it doesn't require any complex things. And then we leave the matter there. And Honorable Masipa, I don't see any rushing of things here. I think things are systematic, that we defer the other matter to allow parties to take mandates. So we are not rushing parties to discuss something they are not ready
on, and the question of oral submission, there has been a call that this matter be considered, and then we are going to consider that tomorrow. So I think we are reading from the same hymn book or from the same page. No one is being rushed to do anything. So can we then leave this matter there? Shouldn't we reconvene at 9:30, not 9? Advocate Bonani? Advocate Bonani?
Chair, we're already down for 9:30, unless you want to move it from 9:30 to 9. Is that what you are proposing?
No, I'm not proposing that. I thought someone would say let's meet at 9. So
no, we're down for 9:30. 9:30 tomorrow, yes. That's
supported. 9:30 yeah. Supported, Prof.
Okay, honorable members, and thank you very much for your constructive engagement. I can see that we are moving forward and moving forward together. Honorable Minor, do you want to say something before?
No, honorable Chair, I'm fine. Thank you very much. I'll phone you after the meeting. Thank you.
Okay. The matter, the meeting.
What are you going to talk?
Family
what
matters.
What are you going to talk in camera?
Family matters.
Mama weep.
You know, we are cousins, we are sisters, we are brothers and sisters-in-law.
So thanks very much, Prof. What are you rushing for?
Thank you very much, Prof.
Thank you very much. Is there anything I can?
Thank you, Chair.
Long live the Chair.